You're watching the Mighty B in Sports, joining up the world from our international broadcast centre here in Qatar, live on Twitter, and there's a podcast available too as well now. You're watching Keys and Grey. If you're watching in New Zealand, incidentally, you have our thoughts and prayers, and if you had relatives caught up in that atrocity, condolences as well. What goes through the minds of some people? Anyway, on our show today, 32 or 48?
It's not going away, is it?
No.
It's not going away.
That's for the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. There's a meeting in Miami this weekend. And if you put me on the spot, Andy, I would say to you, I think it'll be 48.
Shared. With?
Don't know.
Not me.
I think that's way above our pay grade.
That's way above our pay grade, yeah.
But I do think we're...
You feel that's that the pressure's coming on Qatar?
Yes, I think it's at the very highest level now.
Okay.
And we'll find out later. We'll be with Rob Harris in Miami very shortly. Presume the Daily Mirror aren't talking about this. After our conversation with John Cross last week, he said the Mirror are very careful about footy leaks stories. Well, Manchester City this week, we know, are under investigation for all kinds of different reasons. Would they have been talking about that? But the story that we're referring to is that the FIFA are saying that, you know, we've always been aware of these leaks. You don't have to actually put them on the table in conversations when you're speaking to people. You can make the allegation, to which the response often is,
to explain
how do you know that? Well, explain. Anyway, we'll go into that a little bit more later in the story. They said it would never happen again, but it is happening. A miracle in the National League. It's another Leicester City story. Solihull Moors, bottom last Christmas, on the brink of coming up to the Football League. We'll talk to their captain.
Are punching well above our weight, so for us to be even in the debate at the moment for going in going up as top spot, it's quite incredible, really.
Last home game, crowd 975.
Well, I'm thinking they'll break that 1,000 mark before the season's over.
Manager of Solihull Moors, Tim Flowers, former England goalkeeper.
Yeah, good, great.
More from Darren later.
Great.
We saw the dark side of football last week. Hooligans, mindless buffoons running onto pitches at Birmingham and Arsenal and attacking footballers, Andy. But football can also be for the good.
Yes.
And this story we will investigate further. Rob Allen, the captain of Dads United, all of whom have been touched by tragedy in their lives, the loss of a child. This team based in Northamptonshire, they've come together and are finding solace and comfort in each other's story, which is terrific.
That is.
And this is what we did last week on Keys and Grey. What on earth is happening at Real Madrid? Embarrassed in the Champions League last week. You think Mourinho will be in post at Real Madrid by Monday?
Well, I think 90%. I don't know if on Monday, but even they were considering yesterday to sack Solari now before the match against Valladolid. You know that Zidane was called. He said, no, this is not the moment to go to the club. So Zidane, Mourinho is the only option.
We're reading there are 10 clubs in the Premier League want answers as to how it is the City can be as dominant as they are. And I think we know now, don't we?
I went to UEFA press conference, or UEFA convention in Dublin in December, and there was definitely a feeling there that if Man City are indeed guilty of this latest breach and the accusations, then the only way to punish them now will be a Champions League ban.
Why? Why does home advantage matter? The point we'll be discussing here is why home advantage doesn't when you get to a sudden death scenario.
Like a penalty?
Taking penalties, yes.
It's been found that with high pressure situations, supportive crowds can increase self-consciousness.
With a penalty shootout, those 40,000 fans, Richard, who are encouraging you and lifting you, in my opinion, become a burden because they're putting all their hopes and prayers on you to score that penalty.
Well, as it turned out, it wasn't, of course, Mourinho. What? Well, I was getting a little bit of stick from the younger members of our production team this week, Andy. I'd previously passed comment about the current style of wearing your trousers up your legs with no socks.
Ah, right, yes. Yeah? And is this your answer to them?
Well.
Oh, you have a picture. Oh, I was going to say, I thought you had a picture of me there for a minute. Well, thank goodness for
what
that.
What do you think?
Well, it's not for me, actually, but I mean, I think he can carry it off, to be fair.
What? And I can't?
You can't, definitely not, no. No. No, sorry. That just doesn't look right in any way you look at it. That's Zinedine Zidane.
You think so? He's got his son's jacket on.
But
as
he
well.
Can
look,
wear what he likes. Everything's supposed to be smaller no, these I'm days. Sorry. Everything's no. smaller. No. He carries it off. You, I'm afraid, back to normal, please. Sorry about that.
Fabulous. Was he not?
He was unbelievably good. I watched it, obviously, wondering what would happen against arguably the best defence in
Europe.
The best
ever now?
Well, I've always said that. You and I have had arguments with many people who have arrived here at Qatar to debate with us Messi or Ronaldo. I've always said to you, because of what he's done and where he's done it and how often he's done it,
England,
and the various
Spain,
goals that he gets.
Italy.
The two goals he got against Athletic, what I would say is, and people might say, well, Messi will score goals that he wouldn't. I'm not so sure about that, but he'll definitely score. He's got 129 headers. Mm. 129
Absolutely
headers.
Absolutely extraordinary Unreal. Performance. The draw was made, of course, earlier Friday. This is how they came out of the hat. And I say that specifically because the last tie there, Barcelona and Manchester United, that's reversed in order that two Manchester clubs aren't at home in the same week.
Wow.
So United will play at home first against Barcelona.
They won't be happy with that.
No, they won't.
Most teams at this level agree that you'd rather play the second
yes.
game at home.
It's like that, incidentally, because City That's finished higher than United in the league last year. And it's happened in the Europa League as well, where Chelsea and Arsenal have had the same problems.
So I guess Arsenal have to flip then, do they?
Chelsea finished higher.
Yeah, so Arsenal had to flip. Yes. They now play Napoli at home first. Again, those are two big decisions that UEFA have made already that don't help Arsenal, in my opinion, and don't help United.
4th, 5th and 6th of April, those ties. We've covered this story. These are those that we always say caught our eye and we've kept an eye on. Hakim Al-Arabi, remember?
Yes, I do.
Let's not go too deeply into it. No. It's too complicated. Australian refugee, if you're a regular Keys and Grey viewer, you'll know exactly the story. Fell out with the Bahraini royal family. Found his way back to Australia after a great deal of pressure from the world of football. Now officially an Australian citizen. Bolton, we've touched on. Last week, Ken Anderson, the owner, said, I'll pay all the wages, costs, by the middle of next week. He didn't. He hasn't. They stumble from one problem to the next at Bolton. Still no takeover, which we thought, well, he said would be completed this week. Or
I honestly don't see a way back there. If somebody was going to take that club, I'm pretty sure they'd be at it now. That's 600,000 the guys are owed already. That's 1.2 million in about 2 weeks' time. Who's going to pay that? If he can't pay 600 grand, he's not got 1.2 million to pay.
This I loved after United were beaten at Arsenal last week. Arsenal stirred by Jesse Lingard's celebration in the cup tie. Remember the moonwalk dance? The first half goal, he then described the Emirates as a dance floor in a social media post. In your mind, he said, you will never forget something like that. That's the keeper, Leno, who said, we were inspired by that.
Really?
Yeah.
I've seen some weird celebrations.
But yeah, but it was a bit naughty.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it derogatory?
Yeah, it was a bit naughty.
Okay.
This, very interesting, a comparison on this season and last. Huddersfield, as we know, rock bottom, minus 54.8% down on points returned from last year. Tops, not dissimilar, is it? Spurs, no change.
No change. I think that's pretty much as... I mean, when you and I spoke, we kind of thought City would be lower. Definitely Liverpool would be higher, and that looks to me like the way it's playing out.
Yeah, yeah.
United and are interesting.
This inaccurate because this is how much, as you can see, how much does your club's highest earn around per minute?
Uh-huh. Well,
they're actually, this is 350 grand short of what he's
earned. Yeah, that's half a week's wages they've put there for him.
So at the moment, on this basis, 11,000 per minute.
That's
per minute. It's 22,000.
22,000 a minute.
A
minute, yeah.
Look at the likes of Benteke. It's
staggering.
Nearly
10,000
a minute,
staggering.
Andy.
Staggering. And you know, I could get that. Sanchez is out of Benteke, Mesut Ozil out
of it. Some good players down here, look. You wouldn't argue too much with what they're earning, but wow.
I mean, Kevin De Bruyne's only up there because he's been injured all season. So that's kind of unfair for him to be there. The best player up there who's given money value for money is N'Golo Kante. Of course he is. Because he plays every game. So he does earn his money. Absolutely. One or two up there.
When I saw that, I saw Andy Gray, I thought, wow, £2,500 a minute, that's not true.
I think that's a month, isn't it?
This is another one we've been talking about. Birmingham, who were in the middle of a financial fair play investigation last summer and had a transfer embargo imposed. They broke it and started signing players. This week, and we discussed it last night, we said they might wait until the end of the season. They're not going to. They're going to make a decision this coming week. If it's a point deduction and they're talking about 10... That puts them in the relegation fight rather than the promotion fight.
So they would take the points off this season?
That's what they're saying.
Is that fair?
Yes.
You happy with
Absolutely.
That?
Well, they shouldn't have been signing players last summer in the middle of an embargo.
Listen.
No problem. That made me laugh because I know you've done it. Brazilian Anderson Lopez scored his first goal in Japan for his football team, which I don't think I'll bother trying to mention. Let the advertising awning only discover a 10-foot drop
it's
on the
good,
other side.
That isn't good, that. I prefer it to be Gordon Strachan.
Not only did he stay on, he went on and scored four
more. Ah, well, there you go. Obviously, the drop never affected him. Well, that would have been a frighten. That would be scary. No, that would be scary.
And as we know, Maradona created all kinds of records during his playing career. It would appear he's also created all kinds of records away from the pitch as well. I'll leave you to read that yourself. Mm-hmm. Some stunning revelations this week about the wee man.
Busy lad.
Very busy lad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you haven't seen this, go online. It's fabulous.
Hold on.
This is Bersant Celina. Tried a Panenka.
When they were one down?
They're one down.
Oh, you're joking.
They're one down. Oh, exactly wow. The same thing happened to him as did David Beckham in the shootout against Portugal. Yeah. Do you remember?
Yes, I do.
His left foot slipped, hit the ball, so he's missed it. So the ball comes off the back of this.
But look where it goes. Went there. Yes. At least David Beckham's went forward.
Yes, he came back.
Oh, no.
At 1-0.
He would be very popular with his mates and his gaffer. Where did it finish? Did it 3-0. Finish 3-0 for the Baggies. Mm. Naughty boy. You've got to be very good to do that.
And that was an interesting little arithmetical test. Wycombe Wanderers Sunderland, which featured three injury time reds, but they still ended up with 21 on the pitch.
Yeah.
How? Brilliant. Because Honeyman and Tyson had already been substituted when they were sent off from the bench.
For fighting on the touchline?
Yes.
Oh, brilliant. Well done, guys.
Fixtures this weekend, Premier League and FA Cup ties on beIN Sports, of course. These are the Premier League games, all of them live. David Moyes is with us and Karl-Heinz Riedler.
Excellent.
Also. Andy and I have had a go at predicting what we think the outcome is. You'll find those predictions on Twitter. Please get involved. These are the quarterfinals. Both Manchester clubs still involved. One or the other there has got themselves a trip to Wembley upcoming, haven't they?
Yeah.
So too here.
Millwall breaking at Wembley.
Yeah.
Cobblimey, what an open. Well, I'll say what an open.
We're off to America next. 32 or 48 for 2022. It's looking as though it might just be 48. We'll find out more. Right, our next story. Football's dirty war. Mm. We were discussing this last week.
Yes.
Footy leaks. Remember, John Cross, who'll be with us shortly, was saying the Daily Mirror were a little uneasy about reporting stories that Footy leaks have put in the public domain. Well, can I add first, because they follow up. Well, Mark Goddard, who was in charge of FIFA's transfer matching system until recently, has this week gone public and said, well, FIFA have known about this for a long time. We've never had any problem with it. Hiya, Mark. How are you?
Hi, Mark.
Very well, guys. Nice to be on the show. Thanks
for the invite. Can you fill in the gaps for us, Mark? John Cross last week, chief football writer at the Mirror, was saying, well, we're a bit uneasy about Footy leaks, so we don't go in where perhaps Der Spiegel do. And yet your attitude is FIFA have always known.
Well, certainly, just like everyone else, when the information started breaking, it was accessible online. So I was certainly on record back then in my official role to say all information is helpful for us in running our investigations and guiding us in what questions to ask our stakeholders, which were all the football clubs and associations operating on the platform. So, you know, we certainly balanced, what was being revealed with how it was being obtained to the best of our extent to determine. It certainly was informative documentation that we took a close look at.
Mark, how do you judge when doing that what's genuine and what I would assume fake?
Yeah, I mean, we have, past tense, FIFA TMS has a pretty robust compliance function now. And back then, that was something that we were spending a lot of time and resources in building. So you can appreciate, for example, you know, the system holds a huge number of documents. And we did a full check on the veracity of the information we were seeing. And we were able to do that by comparing documents with documents that we had in our system. And we went through a pretty rigorous process, or a very rigorous process, of determining the veracity of of what Football Leaks was producing. And then it was really a judgment call on, you know, without knowing exactly how it was obtained and really being in no position to determine that, we had to make judgment calls across a series of investigations on how best to use the information.
So you're not too concerned, Mark, then, between this blurred line, we discussed it again a lot last week, of morality and legality. As far as you're concerned, if it's in the public domain, it's worth pursuing.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's in the public domain. What we'll find out, and that was one thing that we weren't able to determine from the gentleman that's now, I believe, being extradited to Portugal, is how he obtained the information. We certainly did a check of our own systems and our own security and took a series of precautionary measures so that we could rule out that it was coming from our system. And once we were able to do that and convince and be very convincing to our stakeholders and also do it to our satisfaction, then, yeah, we will only find out how he obtained the information once that proceeding occurs in Portugal. And that will be really fascinating because I guess that's what his defence lawyers will be trying to point out to the judge is how that information was obtained. For example, was the information obtained because he asked for it and a disgruntled employee at Organisation X sent it to him? Or is he one of a number of highly skilled hackers that have penetrated hardened security systems in various organisations to obtain the information?
Yeah, we should just... Sorry, Mark. I just to update people watching, Iru Pinto is the name of the gentleman. Mm. He's in Hungary at the moment. He was extradited last week. Yeah. There was an appeal, failed. They expect he'll be extradited Monday. Mm. The reason he's going back to his home country is that he originally wrote stories that upset Benfica and Sporting.
Yes.
But from that, Mark, we've got a mine of information that actually has proved very useful, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, and there's a series of competent bodies, sorry to use a bit of legal speak, you know, the Swiss investigation here in Switzerland. You've got, I think, the French authorities. You know, there's a series of competent bodies, tax officers that are lining up to talk with him and get access to his information and put him on the stand potentially to help them pursue options. You know, for these competent bodies or investigation units, all you need is enough information to ask the right question. And if you ask the right question, then the individual or organization that you're interviewing has to answer you. And that was the same with TMS compliance. The clubs were obliged, in fact, obligated to participate and cooperate in any investigation that we have. And, of course, if we find a piece of information in an ongoing investigation that gives us a good steer on what question to ask, then that's what we do. And then we've obtained the information in a correct fashion.
So let's just use Manchester City as an example. Their defence of the allegations that have been placed at their door is, well, that's from a leaked email, so we're not responding. That's not good enough then.
I mean, in a formal proceeding, I guess they can make that statement, although I'd be curious to see how far it would go. But imagine that there's investigations going on and where we've got an ongoing procedure with Club X and we find information from Football Leaks that informs us to ask for, say, specific emails from this person to this person over this time frame. We don't have to, as an investigative body, justify why we're asking for those emails. We can just ask for those emails. And then, of course, the club in question is stuck between complying with the request or not. And if they don't comply with the request in our framework, that in itself could have been a disciplinary matter. And that, of course, as you imagine, with our very, very capable investigators, creates more suspicion. So there's more pressure. And this is how it works. And that's why those French and German and Swiss authorities would really like to talk to this guy.
I bet you they would.
By the way, so would we, Mark.
Yeah, wouldn't we just?
Yeah.
Wouldn't we just?
But thank you in the meantime
thank
for talking
you, Mark.
To us. Much appreciated.
Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks, Mark. Bye-bye. I think we've only just started to hear
well,
about
I guess
these
that
tales.
UEFA and FIFA are not going to stop using WikiLeaks anytime soon, are they?
No.
Oh,
and those
footy
clubs
leaks.
Thought, well, it's stolen.
Yeah, we'll complain.
We're not responding to that. Sorry, no.
Not going to happen.
So there's, and we're about to go live to Miami. There's a FIFA meeting this weekend to discuss Qatar's World Cup in 2022. How many participants? Well, you might recall recently, Andy and myself caught up with Hassan Al-Tawadi, who's the chair of the Delivery and Legacy Committee, and this is what he was saying then. 32 or 48 teams.
I like the way you just threw that out there.
Yeah.
You know, I'll give you my very objective comment on that. The 48 team will, you know, 48 team edition will definitely be in 2026. The concept will be in 2022 is subject to a feasibility study that is currently ongoing. From our side, we are still ongoing with preparations for a 32 team format World Cup. Until we see the results of the feasibility study, and again, the feasibility study has to be concluded as soon as possible for any possibility of the 48 team to be implemented.
Could you cope with it? The country?
Let's look at the feasibility study. There's a lot of givings. There's a lot of issues that need to be addressed and assessed. You know, so far for me, I don't want to pre-conclude what will be out there. But as I said, today, it's a 32-team World Cup. Well, this is a story that not a lot of people are aware of. All right. When we first bid, we submitted our official bid as Qatar. But we always had in our mind and in our intentions for this bid to be Qatar and Friends. Right? We called it Qatar and Friends, Qatar and Family. Submitted as a joint bid because we always knew that joint bids were always looked at in a very negative way and would have hurt our chances. So what we did originally was we did two things when we bid. First, we bid for 2022 very clear. So we made it very clear and cut that that was our goal. But at the same time, we sent a letter asking if we were to consider a bid between Qatar and Friends with an organizing committee that was, you know, one organizing committee, no two organizing committees to avoid the issues, one organizing committee that we will guarantee will be managed in a certain way, but we will include also Qatar and Friends. And at the time, we looked at it for being, you know, GCC countries and otherwise and so on. Because that was the intention. From early on, from the very first days, that was the intention, to consider, you know, other nations. We did not receive a favorable response from FIFA at the time.
Surprising.
And so at the time, unfortunately, you know, we weren't able to pursue that concept. Having said that, from day one, our goal and our aim was that this was not a Qatari bid. This was an Arab Middle Eastern bid, first and foremost.
Well, time's running out to make a decision. That feasibility study is in the hands of FIFA now. There's a meeting in Miami this weekend. Very grateful to Rob Harris, our next guest, to join us. Rob was with us, 6 months ago, Rob? And I think when you first broke this story,
yeah.
It's gathered momentum, hasn't it? What can you tell us? What are they saying this weekend in Miami?
Well, yeah, it's a big decision day today in terms of the future of that World Cup. The feasibility study is something I got hold of earlier this week, which looked into just could FIFA expand the World Cup to 48 teams, adding those extra 16 teams, the extra 16 games. And what's going to happen at the meeting today here in Miami is they're going to discuss, is it possible? Is it possible for the FIFA administration and Qatari organisers to go forward in the next month or so and come up with a concrete plan to be able to put potentially to the Congress of FIFA in June to go ahead with that bigger World Cup? But what it relies on, something that report made very clear, is at least more one country in the rest of the region. And it also made clear that currently that couldn't be the UAE, Saudi Arabia and Bahrain while they are boycotting Qatar, which does leave only Oman and Kuwait as potential options. And really, that FIFA hasn't yet fully scrutinised the infrastructure in those countries.
Rob, is this going to be a FIFA decision? I get a feeling, listening to all the arguments, that the arguments are coming from one man and one man only, and that's Infantino, and that it's, he seems determined to drive this through. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, this is really... the World Cup seems to be really settled for 2022 up till a year or so ago. All the rows over their scheduling seemed to be resolved over the shift from June, July to November, December. The European leagues were sort of placated. And then Infantino comes in and shakes things up again, and it, you know, has caused some issues around Qatar from what I picked up, because things were settled. But it was a year ago at a CONMEBOL meeting in South America when there was technically an official request from CONMEBOL to add the extra 16 teams, because of course we know there will be a 48-team World Cup from 2026, so it's just a matter of fast-tracking it. And Infantino embraced this, and since then he's been going around the Middle East almost trying to be a peace broker. I think he really sees the fact he can use football to try to bring the region together, and Infantino, as the FIFA president, wants to be the person who gets some of the credit for it. You know, it's something he's talked at length, and he's really pushed this idea, even with all the political and logistical barriers that have come up in front of him.
Rob, you have done some fantastic work on this. As you scuffle about amongst your contacts over there, what is your best guess?
Well, it seems, I think, at this meeting that there will be approval to go ahead over the next month or so to come up with this detailed feasibility study into the viability of using at least one other country in the region. What they're saying is it would need at least 2 to 4 additional stadiums in this feasibility study I've seen. Obviously, Qatar is the 8 that are being built, so at least a couple on top of that. And there are many other things that are going to have to be considered by the FIFA administration, none more so than human rights. Obviously, it's been something over the last decade that Qatar's had to raise its labour standards amid sort of that external pressure. But now, if any other additional hosts were going to come into the picture for hosting, they'll also have to show they have the human rights that comply with FIFA's own standards. On top of that, there's many legal complexities in terms of adding hosting at this stage, and also whether any of these stadiums would require additional work to bring them up to standard. I mean, what it changes is the compact nature of this World Cup. It will also potentially add up to 6 games a day in the early stages. But of course, if things can be resolved, there is a sense that it could relieve some of that burden on the infrastructure in Qatar if fans can fly in and out from another country and there are games there as well. But something that's been made very clear in the FIFA document assessed by the council today is that Qatar does remain the main host. The other thing is, of course, the fact that from FIFA side that they've assessed is, would there be any fallout from the losing bidders back from that vote in December 2010? I was there in Zurich on that snowy day when Qatar pulled off that shock win. And what FIFA assesses is that there's a low risk of action from either the losing bidders or indeed any of their sponsors, just because of the way that FIFA believes it can change things. But, I mean, that will be something that lingers over the next couple of months.
Rob, enjoy the rest of your time in Miami, and thank you, my friend. We're grateful to you. Rob Harris. Mm. See, the human rights thing, forget that. That's we've come a long way since that was an issue. But I do think that there are conversations now. This feasibility study, that's Politico speak for, we need to work this out.
Do you not think, I'm right, Infantino's driving this?
I do, but if he's driving it into... Listen, I mean, as we said right at the start of the show, this is above our pay grade, but if ultimately the various issues in this part of the world can be discussed and we can all move forward from this very difficult place, so be it. But if it's Oman and Kuwait, we're back where we were with just a mildly extended World Cup, aren't we?
Oh, but that's fascinating. I can't wait to see what's going to happen.
We will be discussing with John Cross a number of things when we come back, but not footy leagues. Or will we? That's next on Keys and Grey. You're watching Keys and Grey on the Mighty Beat in sports all over the world, live on Twitter. And if you've just joined and missed what we've been up to, first of all, where have you been and why? But secondly, there is a podcast available now that you can download. So Mourinho is not going back to Real Madrid. Where, then, is Mourinho going? Here's Carlos Carvajal, Portuguese colleague, and he was interesting in what he was suggesting this week.
I think we'll return to Premier, absolutely sure. Not, I don't know if he will be in the next challenge, but we'll return, because I can feel that he have a special fascination to the Premier. Also, we fix it in London, so the family's in London. It means that... is completely adapted to British life, and he liked to be there. If he will back to England or not, I read one of these days that he said, I didn't talk with him last week, but he said that maybe my next challenge will be not a challenge that a club will be ready to win the Premier League, but will be a club to prepare not to be champion, but prepare to be champion. I don't know if he's thinking about some clubs in England. I don't know if it's a signal that he can return to England. I don't know this kind of signal that he gave, but sure that he will back more strong, absolutely sure.
Everton?
Well, I'm standing here thinking, trying to quickly go through the Premier League and see what kind of club would that be. Ooh, sticks out like a sore thumb for me. It's got to be the Toffees.
John Cross joins us, fascinated, I think, by what he's listening
to. Yeah.
John, this time a week ago, I think we all expected that Mourinho would be at the Bernabeu. Mm. What happened?
Well, I must say our mutual friend Ramon Calderon basically was always incredibly well informed on these matters. Basically, really expected him to be in charge, and I thought the picture he painted, which has subsequently been widely picked up on and then sort of backed up really about some of the players rebelling against it, certainly wouldn't be the first time, guys, would it? That's happened.
No.
You might remember Sergio Ramos famously sort of. Blocking Antonio Conte's proposed move there back in the autumn. So I do actually think that there was a degree of player power involved. Mm. I think that basically it was really interesting to hear that sort of Zidane did talk about sort of a call a few weeks ago. And then basically I think the call then came again and he found it difficult to resist and wait until the summer. And so why wait, basically, if you are committed to something? Mm. We have this with Brendan Rodgers, really, coming back to Leicester. Why would you hold off on something, really, if the proposal is put to you now? I just think Zidane is now trying to pick up the pieces, make sure that Real Madrid get the job done, at least that they get back into the Champions League places.
Yeah.
And rediscover some form. But I do think the players rebelled against Mourinho. Yeah.
So I think Hazard is definitely...
Hazard going now.
I'm sure I could pick this up from the Mirror website, John. The four that Mourinho would have taken: Kane, Van Dijk,
Eriksen,
and De Gea. Very interesting.
That's a good quartet.
I'm sure it was on your...
I was going to say £1 billion later.
Yeah, it's not a bad pitch if you're looking for a job, John, to go in and say, I'm going to bring these four players with me, guys.
Now, John, I need to be really careful here. Are you okay to talk about a footy leak story? Because I noticed this week you were reporting that Manchester City could be facing a two-window transfer ban.
Were we? Where was that?
Was it the Mail or the Mirror? I'm sure the Mirror.
It wouldn't be the Mirror. If John says no, it might have been the Mail.
Ah. I think we referenced another paper's report.
Yeah, that's it. The Mail's report.
I'm not sure that we did. I'm not sure that we did in, and I'm not sure that we particularly related it to football leagues, did we? I mean, it is interesting, the Manchester City story. It's one obviously that's been lingering about sort of the... I think it's on two levels, isn't it, basically?
Yes.
And it has been around that the basic... Obviously, the suggestion is that UEFA, as was reported after, as I say, the meeting in December, that they could possibly consider excluding them as the ultimate punishment if indeed they're found to be guilty of wrongdoing in Champions League and UEFA terms, but the greater sanction, the greater worry would be a window ban, transfer window ban from FIFA if indeed FIFA take this matter further, which, as I say, when around Chelsea at that time was reported then, and again people are writing that it could happen quite quickly, which is the new development on that story, because that story's been around before. But I do think a lot of clubs, as I say, in the Premier League want to see action taken against Manchester City. Is that jealousy? Is that envy? Or is that them feeling that there's been not a level playing field here as clubs sort of approach sort of trying to win trophies both here and abroad?
Will you report it, John?
Richard.
No, I know what you... John, I've got an idea. Wait till another newspaper reports it, and then yes, you reflect that. John, quick one about back to football, more terms. Spurs have suggested that they might go on a transfer spree this summer. All talk, or do you really believe they will?
Well, what is interesting in amongst those stories is obviously the big suggestion is that they might lose a couple along the way. And Christian Eriksen and Toby Alderweireld, the most notable sort of kind of players that could leave as a result of this transfer spree. Andy, what I think is really necessary to keep Spurs going, really, to keep them vibrant and to re-energise them a little bit, if you like, I think is to bring in fresh faces.
Yeah.
And I think to freshen up their squad. I just think that really to not do anything for two windows is to stand still. And I think if you stand still in this league, then you go backwards.
Yeah.
It is really, I think, testament to Pochettino in the job that he's doing, that he's managed to get them into the Champions League quarterfinals and at one stage competing for the title, although that's fallen short now, without any new signings. That's an amazing job. That really is. When we talk about modern football management, and it's, you know, I've been critical of them not winning trophies, but it's also you are judged on being competitive and getting into the top four, getting into the Champions League later stages. Pochettino, to do that without any signings is fantastic. But my word, they'll have to change that approach this summer. By the way, Eriksen, approaching 1 year left, 27 years old. If they lose him, Spurs, this summer, that will be a devastating blow. Fantastic player, certainly good enough for Real Madrid, certainly on Real Madrid's radar.
Absolutely. Yeah. Does the Conte-Chelsea standoff look like ending anytime soon, John?
Well, Antonio Conte, I think, feels very, very aggrieved by this. And a lot of people will be thinking about it. I mean, listen, if Conte gets a job in the meantime, then that changes things. And he's obviously been close in the past. You know, I think he would have taken Real Madrid. So, you know, let's be clear here. If Conte does have the right opportunity, then, he takes it, and then that changes things. But Conte felt very aggrieved at his Chelsea exit, and no wonder. Winning the title from absolutely nowhere, followed by an FA Cup, just missing out on the top four. Honestly, Conte was... could be stubborn, could be argumentative, but a fantastic manager and a fantastic tactician. And honestly, the whole thing around Chelsea, he was forced out, I think, by the player power as much as anything. But he wanted to shake things up, and there was resistance from within. And I do think that unless you give a manager power to manage, then I'm afraid that Chelsea are going to have that problem, as we keep seeing year on, year out.
Of course, they're Chelsea, John. It's what they do. I mean, didn't Ancelotti win the double and get sacked?
Yes, yes.
That's what they do, John.
Di Matteo won the European Cup and got sacked.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, as ever, John, thank you for your time, my friend. We'll talk next week.
Excellent stuff on Footy Leaks, John. Excellent.
The bottom line with Conte is that he's due a $9 million payoff.
Okay.
For the 1 year that was left on his contract. And Chelsea is saying, well, actually, you cost us a lot of money, when you sent Costa a text saying, you know, forget it. So they're counter-suing.
No, that's, seriously?
Yes, that's the
come
bottom
on, Chelsea.
Line.
No, so, come on, a better class. Sorry.
Yeah, well, sorry?
A better class.
Chelsea.
Well, that's what I'm saying. A better class, oh, come on.
Right. when we come back, Leicester City, they said. The miracle could not be repeated, they said. Well, it might just be in the National League, where Solihull Moors, bottom last Christmas, looked like they might make the Football League. We'll discuss next. I've been trying to do this story for weeks, largely because I didn't believe, I have to be honest, that the team we're going to discuss could keep up what it is that they've been doing. And we're going to talk to the captain of Solihull Moors in a moment. This is the National League. The one just below League Two in the UK. These are big clubs, Andy.
Yeah, two.
Leighton Orient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wrexham.
Brian Flynn back in charge. I don't think Flynn has won a game since he retook charge.
Well, he better quickly win one.
Salford.
Money.
Class
Massive
of 92,
money.
Right? Fair play to Fylde. But Solihull Moors, 3 points off an automatic promotion place, tucked in nicely at the moment for a playoff place, to play in the Football League next season. Who are Solihull Moors?
It's my neck of the woods.
The last time I looked, they played a home game in front of 975 people.
Did they really?
It's extraordinary tale. Their captain is waiting to talk to us. That's Darren Carter. Hi, Darren. How
Hi,
are you?
Hi, Darren.
Hi, Andy. How are you, Richard?
Darren, what is going on and how are you doing it?
I've had that question a fair amount of times now, the last few weeks especially, but... I think we've just continued on from what we did last year. Obviously, come sort of Christmas last year, we was in such a predicament, bottom of the National League and really struggling, staring into the abyss, really. Obviously, the gaffer, Tim Flowers, came in with Mark Yates, and we've managed to turn the season around and finish the season really strongly, stay up. And we just took that momentum
into this season, added a few experienced players along the way, and we've just got a really set, organised way of playing that's been really effective.
So in a way, it's a mini Leicester City story, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think we've been sort of compared to that a little bit, and yeah, in terms of, like you mentioned there, your Salfords, your Fylde, your Wrexhams, your Leighton Orients, we are punching well above our weight. So for us to be even in the debate at the moment for going in going up as top spot, it's quite incredible, really.
It's remarkable. Yeah,
I was just thinking, Darren, you're 9 games to go. I know you're going to tell me we take a game at a time, that old familiar football cliche. We don't look further than the next one. But can you gauge the amount of excitement that's growing around the club and what's happening?
Yeah, you can feel it without a doubt. And I mean, obviously, you know the area, Andy. We've got obviously Birmingham City and Aston Villa, West Brom, all the big clubs around us. And even I've had supporters from them clubs coming up to me and saying how exciting it is that we're in the mix and potentially could be heading towards the Football League. So it's hard not to feel that excitement and that buzz. And like you say, the gaffer, Tim, you know very well, he said to us, we've earned the right to be in the mix. So, we're going to keep going and see where we land.
Don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, Darren, but how would it change life at Solihull Moors if you were talking about even a playoff place come the end of the season?
It'd be incredible, and I mean, even the changes now that the club are going through on and off the pitch, especially off the pitch, you're here at the Moors, I'm here at the moment at the stadium, and all the work that's going on behind the scenes in terms of new offices and everything, it's completely turned around within sort of a year to 18 months already, and that's without us even, you know, pushing and getting into the Football League. So I think in terms of how it would change the club, you know, it'd just be significant. We've already got some more seats and the stadium's been changed, adding more seating in case we did go up. So the plans are in place, but it'd be hugely exciting for everybody.
And the immediacy, who's next? Who's this weekend? Who have you got?
We have Braintree tomorrow at home at 3 o'clock.
At home?
At home, yeah.
Okay, I'll be looking for that, and I expect nothing but 3 points to be clipped up on that. Nothing, Darren.
Just keep the momentum rolling. We had a good result on Tuesday against Gateshead at home.
Yeah.
I beat at Salford at the weekend, so it was nice to bounce back.
That's terrific. I hope that we're all consistently looking for results going forward, Darren. And I don't want to speculate too far and curse it, but I do wish you all the very best for the rest of the season. And give the manager our best wishes, will you?
Send Tim our best, Darren.
I will do. Cheers, guys. Thank
Thanks.
You.
Keep
good
it
luck.
Going,
keep
Darren.
It
good
going.
Luck to you.
Keep it going.
Cheers, thank you.
I'll be home next week, so I might just look you up if you get beat.
Always welcome down here.
Thanks, Darren.
You'll have to go now, you know.
I shouldn't have said that.
It's a league, of course. We talked to manager of Braintree. It was the Cowleys who are now Lincoln.
Yes, it was. Look what they've
Harrogate, father and son. So it's a league that's been a pretty good source of some good stories for us. Now, last week we saw the dark side of football. Idiots running on football pitches and threatening the safety of players. This is extraordinary. Football can heal sometimes as well. It can.
Well, it can help. It can certainly help.
Absolutely. It's an extraordinary story from Northamptonshire. 11 guys who have been touched by the loss of babies, stillborn or otherwise, who have got themselves together and have created a football team called SANS, Stillbirth and National Death Charity, that stands for. SANS United. Their captain, Rob Allen, joins us to tell us more. Hiya, Rob. How are you?
Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you doing?
We are good, Rob. And we're touched by this story.
Yes.
Give us some details.
Yeah, so SANS United was formed last year. This is our first season. We did a charity match in May 2018, whereby I put together a team of dads who had all lost children to play against my old Sunday League team after suffering the loss of my daughter in October 2017.
You've found like-minded, Rob. How much of an issue is this, and how much of an inspiration have you been to others?
I think the main issue is surrounding men's mental health, men opening up and talking and discussing their losses. And I think that football is a great outlet. People can come just for the football. They don't have to open up initially straight away. What we try to do is create an environment whereby over time, and when they feel comfortable, they can come and play football and distract themselves from the experience that they've had. And then when they're ready and when they're comfortable...
Let's just hope that we can reconnect with Rob. You see, it is a very masculine thing, isn't it, sometimes, just to absorb issues such
as that. It's a masculine thing not to show them. It's
correct.
To keep everything inside. And the old adage, I'm a man, so I can't show my hurt, my pain. But it's right, that's not true. And that's not the thing. These, as Rob was telling us, they can go and talk with like-minded people, use football.
Let's have a go. Rob, are you still there, Rob? Have we in some way managed to reconnect?
He is.
Rob, we were just discussing how and I think it's a masculine trait, we absorb but we don't share. How have you managed to get the guys to share?
We don't force it. We just try to create a place where they feel open and where they feel comfortable, that when the time's right that they can share.
Would you expect, Mark, more areas of the country to adopt this, I was going to say philosophy, but not really philosophy, but adopt what you're trying to do, to get like-minded men who have lost young children to come together like this and use football as a vehicle to cope with your loss in many ways?
It's already happening. I mean, we're on board now with the charity. We're working closely with them. They've had 33 different requests to start teams across the country. There's already five or six up and running. There's one in Kent, Stockport, Leicester, Warwickshire. There's one over in Northern Ireland just popped up as well. There's one in Southampton, Brighton. So it's something that was obviously needed and was very much missing. And I think that from seeing what we've done and seeing that we're comfortable to talk about our experiences, more people are now feeling confident enough to be able to do that themselves, which is great.
Fantastic.
Good work, Robert. It's not the best link, so we are struggling to communicate. But thank you for talking to us. And as we always say to all of our guests, good luck to you all.
Yeah, thank you, Rob.
Thanks very much.
Thank you,
guys.
Extraordinary story. I'm really pleased that Brighton, who have had relegation issues, Millwall, who have got relegation issues, Wolves haven't. But these clubs, Andy, have all taken the FA Cup seriously enough. And I'd love to see them, I mean, Millwall, Brighton, obviously, it's one or the other, but get the reward.
Crystal Palace have had. They've had relegation worries. Another one.
It'd be lovely to see them get the reward that their almost bravery deserves this season. Wolves have set the Premier League alight, blown everybody away, and have got, of course, a quarter-final against Manchester United in the FA Cup this weekend. Connor Cody's their skipper. Scouser.
Yes.
Released by Liverpool. Now they're talking about...
Oh, he'll want to beat United then, won't he?
Yeah. And he will want to beat United this weekend.
A huge football club. A really, really big football club, and a football club that are playing some really, really good stuff in. And we've got to be aware of that. We really, really have. We know how tough the game's going to be. We really do. And I think if you look too much into that and you look too much into Man United, you'll get a little bit fearful, and we don't want to do that. So it's important that we look at ourselves, we work on ourselves this week and focus on what we can do to try and hurt Man United. But at the same time, respect them and respect what they've done the last few weeks, because it's such a huge football club with a brilliant manager and some world-class players. So we've got to make sure we're ready. This club to playing an FA Cup quarter final, it's very, very exciting for everybody, and you can see the supporters, hear the supporters talk about it a lot. And at the end of the day, we're one game from Wembley, and that's where we want to be. So it's important we approach the game right. Doesn't matter who it is, Man United, doesn't really matter. It's a big game for us, and we'll focus on ourselves.
Right, come on the Wolves.
Good luck to them.
Come on the Wolves.
It's one or the other, Watford or Palace. Yeah. I'd love to see Swansea beat City. They've got other things to worry about this year.
They want the quadruple. Well, Swansea are not getting easy.
Of course they won't, but good luck to them again. Yeah. Another team that are having a go. Yeah. It's one or the other of Millwall, Brighton. All those games live on our beIN Sports channels this weekend, of course. We've got Premier League matches as well. We've got Zinedine Zidane in charge of Real Madrid for the first time at home to Celta Vigo. The Milan derby and Le Classique. PSG, who have already won the title, of course.
Yes, of course.
They did last August, didn't they? That's live as well.
August,
enjoy your sporting weekend. Thanks for your company.